drink, and most importantly, tell Kaiser Permanente they want a decent contract. I thank you, and yeah, they want their strike demands met, right?
Yeah.
So I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
Thank you.
Thank you, the Rogers. And I want to thank you for listening. And stay strong, stay well, and support ourselves. That is, support the working class and support our striking Kaiser Permanente workers. Thanks for listening.
Slightly after 8 p.m., you're tuned to listener-sponsored non-commercial WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org, that's O-R-G, and it's time now for Housing Notebook with Scott Somer.
Welcome to Housing Notebook here on WBAI in New York. My name is the Metropolitan Council on Housing, New York City's oldest tenant union. If you need help with a housing problem, give Met Council a call at 212-979-0611. That is 212-979-0611, Monday or Wednesday from 1:30 to 8 p.m. and Tuesday from 5:30 to 8 p.m. and let's see here. It's Monday and Wednesday from 1:30 to 8 p.m. Got it. Tuesday from 5:30 to 8 p.m. Friday from 1:30 to 5 p.m. And we can get you involved in the struggle for decent, affordable housing, help you organize a tenant association in your building, you know, get you up to Albany, which we need to be doing, and we continue to do out to City Hall and other places around town, as well as we fight for decent, affordable housing. You can follow us on the web as well at metcouncilonhousing.org. That's metcouncilonhousing.org is our website. And likewise, you can also see our sister organization, Met Council Action, at thetenant.org. Both websites chock full of great information for you. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram like everybody else. You can follow me on Twitter as well at Scott M. Somer, S-C-O-T-T-M-S-O-M-M-E-R. Find out what's coming up on the show and stuff like that. We come to you 3 out of 4 Mondays here on WBAI and 99.5 FM in New York, WBAI.org. Likewise on Twitter and Instagram as well. If you want to find out about all the great programming, if you miss a show, you know, please be sure to go and look for it in our archive and do that. Why not do that and support WBAI? And that's a great thing to do. Okay, before we get to our guests, I got some housekeeping stuff to do with you. First is we have our final tenants' rights summer clinic. You know, since COVID, we had suspended the walk-in clinics, but we're taking advantage of the nice weather and we're doing them outdoors. So we got one coming up the 25th, which I believe is Thursday. Yeah, the 25th Thursday, 5:30 to 8 p.m. at a place very familiar to tenant activists. It's the Triangle Park right there outside of Cooper Union where the Rent Guidelines Board often meets. So it's on the 25th from 5:30 to 8 p.m. And it'll be at Cooper Triangle Park, which is between East 6th and 7th Streets, 3rd and 4th Avenue, Manhattan. And please come at 5:30 to sign up. So we'll sit around and we speak communally and try to assist and help each other. 5:30 p.m. If in fact it rains on Thursday, and we could use the rain. If in fact it rains on Thursday, then it will be on Saturday from 12 to 3. Okay, that is our final tenants' rights summer clinic of the summer, I guess. Right, of the year, I guess. Right, because summer we're not going to do anymore in summer after this month. And let's see, tomorrow, if you don't know, tomorrow is primary day in New York. If you haven't early voted and you are registered to vote, you can vote tomorrow in the primaries. And the primaries, that this is the second primary day, and we're having primaries tomorrow for Congress and for the state Senate here in New York because of all the insane stuff that went on involving like redistricting and all that stuff. So we have one again tomorrow, Congress. And there are some obviously very big congressional and state Senate races is going on. If you missed last week's show, we had Michael McKee from Tenants Pack on talking about that. You can go back and find that in the archive if you want to listen to last week's show before, you know, going to vote tomorrow if you have not voted already. If you don't know where your polling place is, you can go to vote.nyc. That's vote.nyc. Punch in your address. They tell you where your polling place is. And you even check if you're registered to vote. Then you can actually see what's on your ballot because not every place has a primary. So if you want to check, do that. You can also call 866-VOTE-NYC, 866-868-3692, 866-868-3692, 866-VOTE-NYC. That's in New York City. If you're outside New York City, because this primary is statewide, you can go to elections.ny.gov. That's elections.ny.gov. And from there, you can also find, you know, what's going on in your area. You can punch in and find out your polling place and all the other stuff. And that number is also 800-367-8683. That's 800-367-8683. That is tomorrow. Polls are open in New York from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. So hopefully you have time to get out and vote. And please vote if you need to. Like I said, go back and listen to last Tuesday, Monday's show. If you don't know what's going on in the elections, you want to see what the tenant perspective is. As I said, Michael McKee from Tenants Pack was here sharing the opinions of Tenants Pack on that, so you don't want to go to the polls unprepared. Then, of course, we'll have Election Day in November, right? Just keeps going. It's just important. Rent guidelines. Let's give you those. The Rent Guidelines Board. So the Rent Guidelines Board has set the new guidelines for leases coming into effect in October. In October, for leases beginning October 1, 2022 through September 30th, 2023, apartments and lofts in New York City, 3.25% for a one-year lease. and 5% for a two-year lease. Thank you, Mayor Adams. And SROs, hotels, and rooming houses, no rent increase at all. Nassau County, 1 year, 2%, 2 years, 3.5%. Westchester, 1 year, 2%, 2 years, 3%. And Rockland County, 1 year, 0.5%, 2 years, 0.75%. And maybe next year we'll be able to announce the rent guidelines for Kingston, New York. Because if you recall from, I think it was 2 weeks ago, we spoke with, or maybe 3 weeks ago, we spoke with Michelle Hirsch, who is a older person up in Kingston. It's like our council people here in New York City. And talked about how the city of Kingston just voted, went through the process, had their housing vacancy survey done, and voted to opt in to the Emergency Tenant Protection Act, which we can now do since 2019. So maybe we'll start announcing those, too, because they're putting together their rent guidelines board now. I think they're going to be appointing the members sometime soon. So we'll keep on top of that one for you as well. All right, if you're just joining us now, it's 8:10 in the evening. You're tuned to Housing Notebook on WBAI in New York. My name is Scott Somer, and we come to you on WBAI. And I just want to take a minute or two before we bring on our guest to talk to you about keeping WBAI alive and thriving and on the air. Why do we need to do that? We are a community-based public, you know, radio station. We're not part of any big network. We're part of the Pacific Network. It's like five stations. None of them have any money. We don't take any commercials. We don't have corporate money coming in here, you know, not government money coming in here, really. So it's, you know, it's really you. You are what keep us on the air. And we have rent to pay. This is Housing Notebooks. I always like to talk about our rent. We pay $14,000 a month for our transmitter space at 4 Times Square. You know, we're in the middle of the FM dial, a prime piece of radio real estate. And also, you know, we got to pay for the streaming and the staff and all the other stuff that all vital to keeping this on the air. And the phone lines that you all call into when you want to say something on the air. So how about you, if you're not already, become a WBAI buddy. Go to WBAI.org. And click on the WBAI buddy link, or if there's still a link up for the transmitter fund, make a donation to that. But just, you know, help us raise money, help us stay on the air, because the more we have WBAI buddies, the more regular stream of money we have coming in, then we don't have to do these preemptions. If you notice, there used to be a time we'd be preempted for 5-6 weeks of fundraising. That hasn't happened in, I guess, almost 2 years now. Which is great. So, you know, we're here with you 3/4 of the time, 3 out of 4 weeks. And we're only going to be able to continue doing that if folks become a buddy of WBAI or make a donation. And please do it in the name of Housing Notebooks. So this way the folks know that you are supportive of, you know, good, important programming like Housing Notebook here on WBAI. So do that, please, and become a member. And when you become a member of WBAI, you actually do get to vote on things. We elect our own board and all that stuff. So do that. Okay. 8:12 in the evening. This is WBAI in New York. And joining me now is Elise Golden from the New Economy Project. She's a land trust campaign organizer, and she'll tell us what that is. And Claudia Warderton, who's a tenant association president up in the Bronx, and we're going to talk about her building a little bit as part of this larger discussion we're going to have tonight about the Tenant Opportunity to Purchase Act. Elise and Claudia, welcome to Housing Notebook on WBAI.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah. Great to have you both. So, Elise, why don't you tell us first a little bit, what is the New Economy Project, and then and what is a community land trust, and then we'll talk about, you know, this TOPA Act, what it is, and of course we'll have Claudia talk about the campaign and her building.
Sure. So, yeah, thanks so much for having us. So, again, my name is Elise. I work at New Economy Project, which is a nonprofit organization based in New York City. And we are fighting for a new economy that works for all. So we have financial hotline support for people who are struggling with debt or consumer, you know, issues. And then we support coalitions that are building a new world that we want to live in. So that includes fighting for a public bank, fighting for more worker co-ops, and then what I do, which is support community land trusts in New York City. And yeah, happy. Does it make sense for me to explain what community land trusts are?
Definitely, because I think most people have probably have no idea. So
yeah.
It's
I didn't know before I started. So right. Community Land Trusts are essentially nonprofit organizations. They're often super grassroots, neighbors, community members coming together with the goal of buying land to take it off of the speculative market and keep it permanently affordable and in community control. So that's a lot of jargon, but essentially what a community land trust or a CLT does is it separates the land from the buildings and what's on top of the land. So the CLT would sort of manages what the land and then decides, you know, okay, landlord, you can have this building, but you have to rent it for a certain price. Or we have this vacant lot and the community decided, you know, we want a garden there or a health center, and it can't just be bought and sold on the open market. So a community land trust is a tool to preserve affordable housing and community ownership.
Do we have many or any of these in New York City currently?
We do. So the Cooper Square Community Land Trust has existed since like the early 90s and has been really successful. There's 400 units of permanently affordable housing and I forget the exact number. I think it's 16 commercial spaces that have been able to remain in the Lower East Side when all of their neighbors have surely been displaced due to gentrification. So the Cooper Square Land Trust has been really successful. We also have a newer pilot in East Harlem, the East Harlem El Barrio Community Land Trust. There's Innerborough Community Land Trust. And then we have about a dozen other community land trusts that have been, you know, popping up around the city, community members organizing, saying, hey, we're sick of landlords buying and selling property and making money and not actually involving us in the development and the development of our community. And so they're organizing to form CLTs.
And we could spend the whole show just talking about how these things get financed or set up, whatever. Maybe we'll do that another day. But so I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about, before we get into TOPA, I want to invite Claudia to join the conversation. And Claudia, you're the president of a tenant association up in the Bronx. And, you know, I want to use your story of your building a little bit to move us into this conversation about the Tenant Opportunity Purchase Act. Tell us a little bit about your building. I guess what was it like, how big the building is, stuff like that. And then like a bunch of years ago, you got a new landlord. And what happened when that landlord showed up?
So our building has 21 units. And years ago, I think this was, I'm trying to remember, I think this was in 2018 or 2017, we got a new landlord, and it was out of the blue because the previous landlord went into bankruptcy. So we didn't know that the building was being sold. All we knew was that the landlord was trying to fix their finances to give us all new leases. So we got a new landlord. He, you know, gave a memo to everyone and basically said that the rent would be increase on a case-by-case basis. And at that time, one of the tenants was trying to notify us that, like, listen, this building is rent stabilized. And at first, like, we didn't pay her any mind, only because, like, she always said that the building was rent stabilized, but we didn't have leases to reflect that. And then a few months after owning the building, we got a package from DHCR, basically stating that our landlord was trying to destabilize our building. So, which we were like, oh, then the building is rent stabilized. If they're trying to destabilize this, it doesn't make any sense.
So the prior, just for a second, I want to get some so people understand. Yeah. The prior landlord, the one who went into bankruptcy, had not been treating you as rent stabilized in the way they operate the building, even though you legally had that protection. You weren't getting leases with the rent stabilized rent increases and stuff?
No.
And that was that prior, was your prior landlord like just like evicting, would evict people even if they were paid? Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I came in 6 months before the previous landlord went into bankruptcy.
Okay.
So I wasn't too familiar with what was going on with the previous landlord. All I knew is that people were not complaining because their rents weren't going up. And that's the whole I guess, hold that he kind of had over everyone because he wasn't raising the rent, so no one was complaining.
Got it.
You know, so because no one was complaining, they were able to go on and try to destabilize the building behind our backs. Now, we did find out that the process started with the previous landlord. He didn't continue. That's why we didn't get any paperwork from DHCR. The new landlord decided to continue the process, and that's when we were notified by the DHCR about the destabilization.
And how did people react to that? I mean, didn't he also try to, like, raise rents, like, hundreds of dollars and stuff?
Yeah, he did try to raise rents. He tried to only a few people got lease renewals. My rent got raised $165. Another person's rent got raised $300. Another person's rent got raised $500. So it was, like, all over the board and wasn't consistent. While some people's rent got raised $20. That was a whole nother issue of its own. I was actually taken to housing court along with another tenant, not for not paying my rent. I was actually a good standing tenant. He took me to housing court because he said that I wouldn't sign the lease renewal.
The one where he was asking for the illegal rent increase.
Yes. And I basically said that it wasn't fair because the same person that lives in an apartment, the same size as me, who had the same rent as me, his rent only increased $20 while my rent increased $165.
Right. And what happened during that case?
So the judge decided to put a hold on the case pending the outcome of the DHCR. And the judge also said that even if we wanted to file like a case that, like, you know, we disagree with what the settlement was, it could still go on until the final decision was made. So my housing case is put on hold.
Mm-hmm. All right. So you have this. So I gather this must have motivated people to, like, come together and organize. Had you had an association before this new landlord tried to destabilize the building?
No, we didn't. It actually formed right when we got the papers for the DHCR. That's when we started to get together and form and come together and try to figure out what to do. Because none of us had ever experienced anything like this. So it was like a first for everyone. It was a very learning process. Through all our ups and downs, we figured it out, you know? So.
And let's talk a little bit about that. So, I mean, obviously, you had to reach out. I mean, a bunch of tenants, you got together. How'd you get hooked up with any help? How'd you end up with, like, you have the Urban Homestaying Assistance Board and New Economy folks? How did this all come together?
So we have, like, a mixed group of tenants from, like, different backgrounds. We had one tenant that was a freelance photographer for the New York Times. And he knew that, like, somebody, a reporter at the New York Times, was trying to do articles on people being displaced in the Bronx. I think in the city in general, but she was trying to focus on the Bronx. So she reached out to us to do an article about our issues. This was the first New York Times article. I don't think many people realize we had two on our building, but this was the first article that came out in, like, 2019, 2018. I don't remember the exact year. And from that, we had a lawyer reach out to us from a nonprofit organization. And then she connected us with Take Root, who was the main legal representation that was helping us with the DHCR. And then years later, when we finally learned that the landlord was selling the building, Take Root put us in contact with UHAP. And the initial contact was not for UHAP to, like, take over our building. It was just for them to come and explain, like, the different process of what we can do, whether it's a nonprofit, for-profit, or community land trust. We decided to go for the nonprofit only because we thought it was, like, a faster way to, like, make things happen. And we decided to work for UHAP because, I mean, we were more familiar with them because we've been having meetings with them just before we decided that this was, like, good to go.
Mm-hmm. So Take Root, that's Take Root Justice. They came in and helped hook you up to UHAB. And was your lawyer Michael Leonard? Is that what I read in one of the papers, articles?
He came later on. So, oh, okay. Yeah, so he came right at the end. So our lawyer actually, she left, like, right towards the end. So mm-hmm. She actually helped Because there was also a default. Like, so if we wouldn't have been able to get funding for the building, the default was us dropping the case, dropping the DCR case, and also getting Wednesday's leases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I only asked, is Jane Lee, I guess, was your lawyer. I only asked because Michael's been on the show in the past. I saw his name. So, yeah. Okay, so great. So you have this all coming together. You're working with UHAB. I mean, at least you want to pop in here and talk about how did all this start? You know, I mean, there's obviously, we have a great group of tenants. They're organized. They want to come up with a permanent solution, but I would venture a guess that these are all, you know, hardworking folk who don't have the money to buy a building. So, what happened next?
Totally. I think, so I only got involved with this building later after they successfully purchased it. So Claudia, do you want to speak?
Yeah, I can actually explain that part. So right before the pandemic, we actually got the okay from the city. The city had a program. I can't remember the name of the program, but right before the pandemic, they had funding to give us to buy our building. But because our building was listed as rent stabilized, they said that the value of the building was a lot lower than our landlord was willing to sell it for. So we were only getting like $1.9 million from the city, and we were going to get the rest from a private foundation. So when the pandemic happened, like literally we were in the process of like okaying this. When the pandemic happened, everything got shut down. Everything got taken away. The program got stripped, the money got taken away, and we were like back to square one. And then halfway through the pandemic, the private fund foundation decided to give us the total money, which was $2.8 million. We bought the building for $2.6 million, so we had a little bit left over. And thank God they did, because our neighborhood is being very gentrified right now, and we wouldn't have been able to afford it like a year from now.
If you're just tuning in, by the way, this is Housing Notebook on WBAI. My name is Scott Somer with the Metropolitan Council on Housing. I'm talking with Claudia Waterton and Elise Golden. Claudia is the president of a tenant association in the Bronx. She's been telling us about the campaign they went through to actually wrest control of their building from their landlord. And Elise is going to, in a few minutes, talk with us about a statewide move to try to get this to be a possible option for tenants when buildings go up for sale. So, Claudia, but you know, obviously, even if you had the money and stuff like that, the landlord doesn't have to sell to you, right? It is a free market. It could sell to anybody you want. How are we able to leverage the landlord into selling to you all?
So the caviar of all of it was there was a rent law that was passed in 2019 that because of that rent law, the landlords couldn't flip and turn over rent-stabilized buildings as quickly as they used to. I don't remember what the law is. So at least if you know what the law is, let me know. But because of that law, he couldn't just sell the building. He needed to destabilize the building first in order to sell it. No one would touch it if it was a rent-stabilized building. And because we had that DHCR case, no one would touch it because they would have to take over that case if he sold the building. And we weren't dropping it. So in order to get him to sell, we said we would drop it, but we're not going to drop it before you write on the purchasing offer that we have it. So once he signed the purchasing offer, we dropped the case and we were able to send him the funds to buy the building.
So obviously, yeah, he wanted to get like a price for the building that'd be worth it. It was destabilized, and there's a lot of that going on in the Bronx, but he couldn't pull it off, so you were able to leverage the right kind of case. So actually, in some ways, all the pieces just, like, fell in place at the right moment for you guys.
It did, because the building is obviously be worth a lot more money if it was destabilized, you know, but because he couldn't get it done, you know, it wasn't possible. And, I mean, he had investors, like, contact our lawyers to try to arrange some sort of agreement. We kept saying no. You know, we kept saying, you know, you're saying that you could do all that stuff, but we could do it too. You're saying that you're going to give us new intercoms, you're going to redo our roof, but we could do the same thing if we own the building. So he wasn't giving us anything that we couldn't do ourselves.
Okay. So now you guys own the building. Well, You own it or UHAB owns it? Who actually owns the building at the moment?
So technically right now, UHAB owns the building. We're still trying to deal with the city with the Article 11, which is a tax exempt for our building. And then there's a few stuff that we have to work out with HPD that's still pending. And so by next year, I want to say maybe like March or April, the building should be transferred over to us fully and will be a co-op, official co-op.
And you said it's like, what, over 20 units in the building, right?
Yeah, 21 units right now, currently.
Right. And obviously, and going forward, will it be reset? I mean, it's going to be a co-op. People will buy their apartments. Hopefully, you all live there a long time. But if somebody moves or whatever, will there be restrictions on the resales?
Yes. So all the and we have vacant units. So the vacant units and all the resales will go through Housing Connect, and it will go to the low-income tenants. That's through Housing Connect.
And that's the HPD, the city's program for these kind of units. And if people are looking for apartments, it's good to just be signed up on their website and get the alerts, so you know what's coming available. And so it's a solution to keep these things permanently affordable. And obviously, you still have some ways to go down the road, but obviously, you're all in the on the right track. You know, this is like a happy ending. Well, the ending hasn't come yet, but it's clearly a happy story in progress.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a bumpy road, but like, it's so satisfying looking back at like all the hardships that we dealt with and knowing that like some of it, it's like coming to an end. And now that we have more power to decide like our future and like how we want the building to run fully, you know, especially since a lot of us has been living here. I've been living here 10 years. There's another tenant who's been living here like 15 years. So we're like family in this building. And even like in our neighborhood, we're in an industrial neighborhood, so a lot we know all the tenants down our block, around the block. Everyone sort of know each other, so it's like a small community here.
Yeah, no, it's good, and you're preserving community, and that's what's really the best thing of all. Elise, I want to bring you into the conversation here. So we have this great story of success that continues to grow, and what, you know, how can we try to replicate this around the state for other tenants?
Totally. So. Yeah, so one way that we hope to do that is by winning the Tenant Opportunity to Purchase Act in New York State, which would make it a right for tenants to be able to put an offer on their building when it goes up for sale. So the landlord, if a landlord wants to sell your building before they put it out to the open market, they have to first offer it to the tenants. And next, they would have to offer it to community land trusts or nonprofit mission-driven organizations. And then finally, they could open it up to whoever wants to sell. So we hope right now, you know, Claudia and her building, they fought so hard to get to where they are now. And tenants around the state are organizing for tenant control, are in the process of forcing their landlords to sell to them. But this bill, TOPA, would really create a process and a right for tenants to be able to do this on a much larger scale.
And how would it work mechanically? I know it's a pretty lengthy bill, like 24 pages. It's being sponsored by two Brooklynites, State Senator Zelnor Myrie and State Assembly Member Marcela Matenyes. How what's the overview of like how the mechanics of this would work?
Yeah, so an overview is, first of all, let me say the vast majority of rental properties would qualify under TOPA. So you could live in a 200 unit building or you could live in a two unit building and it would most likely qualify. And the way that it works is when an owner decides they want to sell their building, they have to notify the tenants. The tenants would have an opportunity to form a tenant association, submit a statement of interest, choose a organization or a third party to work with them if they choose, or they could also assign their rights to a third party. That could be a community land trust or a mission-driven nonprofit. And then there would be an opportunity to secure financing. So there's sort of a timeline, but what I would say, like, the most important part is that before the landlord, like, puts the building up for sale, they really need to give the tenants time and an opportunity to organize, to come together, to think about, you know, what do they want for the future of their building and their homes, and an opportunity to really insert themselves in that future where right now, you know, it's really hard to assert control over what happens in your apartment building.
And where would the financing come for this kind of like purchases and whatever?
Yeah. So, along with our bill, we're asking for state funding. We are currently requesting a large sum, $1 billion a year for 5 years. We want the state to really support acquisition of housing like Claudia's building to support low-income tenants, really to take advantage of this bill. We also know that there are CDFIs out there, there are grants out there, and there's lots of funders that are interested in this type of work. And so, you know, I think, and I guess the other place where we get funding is like, where do nonprofit housing developers or mission-driven developers get funding already? And so we know that they would be the ones partnering with the tenants to support, you know, securing funding and making it happen.
So what happened with this bill? I mean, it was introduced in the prior session. Did it get any traction, get anywhere? What's the status on it?
Yeah, I mean, we had, I forget the exact count. We had, you know, fairly large number of people sign on to the bill. But, you know, last year was a horrible. So, yeah, we had, sorry, I'm looking at my notes. We had 16 state senators and 30 assembly members sign on. So, you know, it was starting to get some buzz, but nothing enormous. You know, last year was like a really bad year for tenants' rights. We didn't pass many of the laws that, or many of the bills that we were hoping to get, which would have really, really supported tenants and homeless people. And so, yeah, the bill is going to be reintroduced this session, and we hope to build, you know, even more power than we built last year to be able to win.
Mm-hmm. I would think in a climate where we're hearing every month about how like the median rent in every borough keeps climbing higher and higher, you know, and it's not just a New York City problem. I mean, is, you know, rent burden people throughout the state. You know, the numbers are, it's not just New York City, it's throughout, you know, the Hudson Valley and other, you know, other parts of the state as well. I mean, there's an article the other day in the Times about how workers up in the Catskills, the people they need to work there can't find places to live up there. So it's, you know, it's become, you know, a real crisis. We've lost more than 160,000 affordable rental homes in the 5-year period of 2012 to 2017 in the state, almost 55,000 of them for outside the New York City metropolitan area. And, you know, we have a situation where, you know, the rent burden, the rent burden figures in New York State are quite dramatic, and they keep continuing to climb. And so solutions need to be found. And also, when you look at New York City, you know, there's a land shortage. So the ability to build, there's not a lot of available plots of land around. So obviously things such as TOPA and Honda, which did pass the legislature about, you know, repurposing hotels and office buildings, you know, for, you know, potentially the great housing for the homeless and whatever, you know, are solutions that need to be looked to.
Yeah, definitely. And we see, yeah, TOPA as a real anti-displacement bill. You know, tenants so often are getting displaced when their building goes up for, when their building is sold. So especially without good cause eviction in place, or protections, you know, Claudia and her building faced real, a real sense of like needing to move and displacement pressure when their building was up for sale. Mm-hmm. And so we see TOPA as a way to like harness, you know, organizing and using it as an opportunity for tenants to assert the ability to stay in their homes and like have a say over what happens there.
Claudia, yeah, let me ask you, Claudia. I mean, you know, obviously, you probably went through, you know, you're obviously very positive and very encouraging and inspiring, and you're talking with us this evening, which is great. But I'm sure there are probably a lot of scary moments and probably moments of people sitting around there going, what are we going to do? Where are we going to live?
Oh, yeah, of course. Like, when I've never been in housing court before in my life. And when I had to go to housing court, my lawyer, and it wasn't Take Root, it was Mobilization for Justice was my lawyer for my housing case. And she even told me that, like, there's no guarantee that you won't get evicted. You know, sometimes it all depends on the judge. Like, the judge can look at the evidence and still be like, yeah, you're evicted, you know? So that was scary because I have no place to go. Like, I do have family that live in the city, but, like, it's not like, oh, yeah, I'm going to pick up and, like, come live with you guys with my dog, you know? My brother lives upstate New York. My poor nephew is allergic to my dog. So every time I go there, you know, he's, like, sneezing and has runny nose and stuff. Like, so I feel bad. So it's not like I had another place, you know, and most people don't. Like, we have two low income tenants in our building. If they were to be evicted, they go back into the homeless shelter. You know, that was their alternative. Some of the people here do have other places to go, but like for them, it was more of a do or die moment because it's like they didn't want to go back into the homeless shelter. And I didn't want to, not that I would be the person sending them there, but I didn't want that for them either, you know? And I've heard stories about how hard it is just to get out of the homeless shelter and how hard it is for landlords to take the vouchers, you know? And that's scary, knowing that you're back in the same place where you left. And you thought you would be in this building for the rest of your life or the rest of your children's life or whatever. And then now you have to go back to that same place. Like, I wouldn't want to do that.
No, not at all. So what would you say to, like, tenants who might be listening, who, you know, are in a shaky situation, a precarious situation with their landlord? You know, what would you say to them to, like, you know, give them confidence in a situation like this?
I would say, you know what? It's scary. None of what I did was easy. You know, I fought really hard. All the tenants here fought really hard. But the end result was so worth it. So worth it. You know, there's no guarantee in life of whether you're going to be there or not. So you might as well just take the chance. And I also want to stress, like, tenants who are organizing, don't dismiss someone who can't make those phone calls, who can't, like, go out and protest. Because sometimes, like, their form of putting the effort in looks differently than yours. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes, like, if their situation is a little different, they can't be the face, but they could be, like, the back end helping you out, too. So I also want to stress that determination looks different to different people, and it's okay. You don't have to be the person calling all the time, but you could be the person sending the emails. You could be the person handing out flyers, you know? So there's a place for everyone. Yes, it's stressful, but I'm telling you, it's so worth it in the end. It's so worth it.
Take those words to heart, everyone. So Elise and Claudia, if there are folks who want to, like, you know, be in touch to get advice or whatever, or on how to manage a situation like this, how can they reach out and get in touch with you guys?
Sure. You can visit our website, neweconomy.org. You can also go to Housing Justice for All at housingjusticeforall.org. There's going to be a teach-in this Wednesday at 7 p.m. That you can register for through Housing Justice for All, which is going to talk about social housing, this sort of decommodified resident-controlled housing that we're fighting for. So again, that's 7 p.m. on Wednesday. Feel free to register for it on Housing Justice for All.
And that's going to be a Zoom teach-in, I gather.
And that's an online thing. Teach-in, yeah.
Right. And your website is actually neweconomynyc.org.
Oh, just, thank you.
That's okay. And we'll have all those links on the Housing Notebook show page. So Elise and Claudia, I mean, I want to thank you both for joining us this evening. And Claudia, I hope you, and both of you for that matter, but Claudia, please keep us up to date on what's going on with you guys. And, you know, as you hit various steps and, like, you know, the day you guys get the deed to the building, you know, want to hear about that as you transition from tenants to owners. How do you feel about that? It's going to be a different role in life. When the heat's off, it's not going to be someone to call. You have to call yourself.
Well, here's the funny part, which most people don't know about me, and it may come off a little privilege. I hope it doesn't. Like, I come from a family that owns things. So I wasn't born in this country. I was born in Guyana, which is South America. And my grandfather came to this country first, and he was able to buy an apartment building, not in the greatest neighborhood, but in Brooklyn. And all of us lived there as like a family. And then my father left that apartment building and bought apartment building for himself. And we all lived there as a family. And I have uncles who have apartment buildings of their own. So I'm used to seeing my family own stuff. And I come from a family of mechanics and contractors. So I'm used to seeing them own stuff, used to seeing them fix stuff. So for me, it's not weird. But I do know it's a strange feeling for other people. And I want people to know that it's okay. It's okay to like not know everything. No one comes out of the womb knowing everything. Like, it's a learning process, you know? So it's okay. It's okay to be uncomfortable. It's okay to be scared, you know? Just realize that, reach out to people who know more than you do, and seek help when you need it.
Right. The most important thing is to be able to know not just how to ask a question, but when to ask a question. So yeah. That's good. I take exception to one thing you said, being a Brooklyn native. All Brooklyn neighborhoods are great. So,
this was back in like the mid 80s.
Yes, but all of Brooklyn, all neighborhoods in Brooklyn, like the Bronx, are great. So even though you guys live on the mainland, we live offshore. So but I want to thank you both so much for coming. This is a great thing for your building. It's a great movement, at least, to see if we can roll this statewide. So take care and be well, and do come back.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, take care. And you're tuned to Housing Notebook here on WBAI in New York. My name is Scott Somer. We got about 10 minutes left or so. We can open up the phones if there's stuff you want to talk about. You need to comment a question, help with a housing problem, give us a call, 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877 is the number of the call. If you have comments or questions, need help with a housing problem, give us a call, 212-209-2877. And by the way, earlier when I spoke about donating to the station, I forgot to give you the phone number to donate, which is 209-212-209-2950. 212-209-2950 is the donation line. 212-209-2877 is the phone line to get on the air. 212-209-2877. As we wait for the calls to come in, I did want to had something else here ripped from the pages, so to speak. Yes. Here we go. The income, I always like these things get updated all the time. The income people need to rent a two-bedroom apartment throughout the country, right? So they have what's the hourly income people need? And, varies from state to state, obviously. I guess the lowest in the country is a scan here. Looks like, let's see, is it Arkansas? It looks like it might be Arkansas at $14.89. Is the hourly wage one needs to? Oh no! Well, Puerto Rico at $9.66, and then Arkansas at $14.89. The most expensive, the way you need to make the most to rent a two-bedroom apartment, maybe working 40 hours a week, 52 weeks a year. So this is what you like to make one job, right? This is without paying more than 30% of your income to rent. And let's see, New York is up there, $37.72 an hour if you're going to work full time, 40 hours, 52 weeks a year, and have just that one job. We are surpassed by California at $39.01. But the winner is the most expensive, I guess, housing, whatever, in the country, the basis of an entire state would be Hawaii, $40.63 an hour. You need to make $40.63 an hour in order to rent a two-bedroom apartment in Hawaii that, would not then have you spend more than 30% of your income on rent. Just the rest of the metropolitan area here in New Jersey is $26.29. And Connecticut is $27.80. So There you go. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's take the first call at 212-209-2877. Hello? Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Margaret from Brooklyn. The Met Council website shows the next clinic for the 25th to be located at La Plaza Cultural Community Garden at East 9th and Avenue C.
It got moved?
The gazebo.
It got moved. They did not tell me. Well, I'm glad you told me. So,
yeah.
I'm glad you're on top of this.
Next 3 days.
I did. Excuse me?
Yeah. The 15th of September and the 20th of October for that location.
I'm on the Met Council website now. Actually, I don't see the what you're referring to, but maybe are those the September ones, but not the one this Friday, this Thursday?
This the 25th of August, yeah. And the
okay, and, is it right on the homepage? Because I'm right here on the homepage, and it's not showing it to me. So let's walk-in clinic.
So it's under
now I found
programs.
It. Got it. Now I found it. Yeah, you click on the. Thank you. Thank you for calling in with that. So it's East 9th Street and Avenue C. No, I appreciate you. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
So thank you for that correction. If you go to the Met Council website, it's on the – click on the walk-in clinic, and that's where you find that. It got moved. I did not catch that. Sorry about that. Okay, let's take the next call.
I'm on the air live.
You're on the air. How are you?
Yes. How are you, Scott?
I'm good.
Your voice sounds a little different tonight. Okay, well,
a little hoarse. That's okay.
Yes, I could tell. You sound a little like Mr. Ed, but that's a bad joke. The young people.
I like you, Wilbur. Okay, let's go. What's up?
Okay. Seriously, you're up to date on all the current events. Is there such a water crisis around the world that cities are going to have to be abandoned? I mean, you're hearing this, right? China doesn't have enough water.
There's a drought. Look, there's a drought in New York right now. You know, I mean, it's not good. You know, it's only see these pictures in the paper of like dry, dead rivers all over the place. Really, it's bad.
But you realize
cities have to be abandoned. I don't know. I mean, the people are here. You know, it's not going to be like a. Excuse me. It's I don't know about cities being abandoned, but you know, it's still going to need water wherever you are, and you know, it's a real problem. So
mark my words, Scott. There will not only be abandoned cities and ghost cities; there might be ghost states. And do you realize this is going to cause no food to be grown, no electricity to be, and the nuclear power plants need water? This could be worldwide
correct.
Crisis.
Yep.
I mean, this is really serious, and I don't hear the emergency that maybe everybody in the world would get together and say, well, let's stop wars. Let's use the military to do things productively. Let's clean up the environment. Let's get our war.
You're just such a naive young man.
Yes, and isn't that overly optimistic? I mean, to think. But what is going to – do you realize what this is going to cause? This is going to cause massive wars.
We do know. We're seeing it now. And we may actually have I think Vajra might be working on a show on the issues of climate change and housing. So stay tuned for that coming up in possibly next week. But watch my Twitter feed. I'll publicize whatever Vajra's doing because I might not be here next week. So, but thank you. Let me move on. I only got another minute or so left. Let me get somebody else on. Thanks for calling, though. You too. Hey, let's take the next call.
Hello.
Hi, you're on WBAI. How are you?
Good. Listen, I just want to shout out a compliment. I miss your show. I love your show. That young woman you had on, I want to put her up for Congress. She was brilliant. But the best part she said was, whenever you have organizations, you got to use your people the best way they want to do it. That's how you keep them going. I thought she was brilliant with that. That was just such a positive true comment. You take them, your soldiers or your volunteers, and what a great, I got to get off. What a great show. She was wonderful. Thank you. Love
Thank
her.
You. Yeah, they're great. Let's take another call. Hello, you're on Housing Notebook.
Thank you for taking my call, Mr. Somer. Daryl McPherson, Bronx, New York.
Hi, Daryl.
Can Can you tell me what part of the Bronx the guest was from? I mean,
their building's over right by the Bruckner Expressway.
Okay. The reason, the more that I'm listening to this, the more I'm understanding that what's going on. And B, we need more people to listen to BAI so that they can at least get a sense of where they can get the help that they need. Once again, I'll remind you that my mother, 101 years old now, was saved by a wonderful attorney who enables her to stay in Co-op City. We just need to get more people to listen to programs like this so that they can begin to trust one another so that we can move the needle. Because when she was talking about what the landlord was doing, had access to do, how are you going to know that?
No, it's true. They got lucky, you know, just like through a connection, as you said, through the photographer in the building who was at the New York Times, and one thing led to another. And that's why it's really important to support your community organizations, your tenant organizations, and outlets like WBAI that helps get that word out there. I appreciate that. It's a good point. I got to wrap up. Got to move on.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Raise
Call back.
Raise money for BAI. Use good search.
Thank you. That's right. Hello, you're on Housing Notebook. Actually, no, I think it's time for us to go. As I think I look at the clock here, it's 8:55. So if you need help with a housing problem, give Met Council a call, 212-979-0611. That's 212-979-0611. Don't forget to vote tomorrow if you're in New York State. Don't forget you can vote tomorrow in the primary. If you want to check your registration, your polling place, stuff like that, it's vote.nyc. Vote.nyc or 866-VOTE-NYC in New York City. Rest of the state, it's elections.ny.gov, elections.ny.gov, 800-367-8683. Polls are open from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. Get out there and vote. It is more critical than ever that we vote. We'll be back next week. Take care. Be well. Take it away, Max, and thank you.
I'm gonna tell you a story about the house in blue. I had a good job showing up for 5 long years. Lord have mercy. The old landlady was so lovey-dovey for 5 long years. She was so nice and kind in every way. Every Friday evening I come home with my paycheck, she'll smile. She was so lovey-dovey. My meal's on time. My bath water be ready. Everything be ready. It rocked on. One Friday evening I come home. I said, landlady. She said, what, Johnny? I done lost my job. She said, what? I done lost my job. And I began to notice then, when I come home in the evening time, she wouldn't smile, acting all sad, acting what's wrong, so I ain't feeling good. I said, Lord have mercy. It rocked on one Friday.
The second round of Democratic Party primary elections will be held Tuesday, August 23rd. Congressional and state Senate seats are up for grabs across the New York City region. I'm John Tarleton. Please join me for a special edition of the Independent News Hour from 5 to 7 p.m. on August 23rd. Myself and co-host Amber Gagarin will speak with candidates, community leaders, pundits, and voters like you about who is best suited to represent New Yorkers for the next 2 years in Washington, D.C. and Albany. Again, it's an election night special edition of the Independent News Hour, August 23rd from 5 to 7 p.m. right here on WBAI 99.5 FM.
This is Julian Joiello, and I'm a listener and supporter of WBAI. I'm a student at NYU and I live in New York City. And I want to shout out to the other young listeners of WBAI. We have to help keep the station going. And the easiest way to do it is through the WBAI Buddy System. If you donate as little as $10 a month, you have proactively promoted free speech radio. Go to the website WBAI.org, click the donate button, and make a difference.
And it is coming up on 9 p.m. WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. Ordinarily, on Monday evening.